Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I haven't told you lies this year. Would I send you flowers if my love was insincere? Freaking out and paralyzed. Your body takes me.
If I was one of the good ones.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. It's our series of live in-studio performances, streaming live on Facebook and YouTube. I'm John Schaefer. It's been 6 years since we heard the last new record from Matthew Deere. He is one of the most distinctive voices in electronic pop, and his last album was the dark but irresistibly danceable Beams. Now, Matthew is back with a new record called Bunny. That's right, Bunny. We'll let Matthew explain that to us in just a bit, but first, he's going to play a song. This is called Can You Rush Them? It's Matthew Deere, live.
Kill me.
That is Matthew Deere live in our studio with Can You Rush Them, which is a song from the new album called Bunny. It brings Matthew Deere back to our studio. It's great to see you again.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I want to talk about Bunny as a title.
Where do we begin? Where can we start?
But let me first ask you about that song, because you know, the line, we need to rush them, we need to take back the streets, in the current context, sounds like a song of resistance.
You know what? It does. Do you have any further thoughts before I go?
No. Okay. I really was just kind of throwing that out there, hoping to see.
I'm not a resistor normally. I mean, of course, we all are at a certain point right now, but I never write protest songs. But it's one of those songs that I actually started, I think in like 2012. So the very beginnings of it came right around Beams. And it was when I was in upstate. And I know I had the Can You Rush Them line early on, and the nimin-na-na-nimin-nimin-no. Like that was the beginning. So something was kicking around that. Maybe yeah. I was foreshadowing a potential resistance on the horizon. But yeah, hey man, it fits. So
yeah, yeah.
I'm going to run with it.
Well, and this is one of the great things about songwriting is a song can mean different things according to when you're hearing it.
This is true.
So Bunny is such a cute and friendly title, and anybody who knows your music knows better than to expect cute and friendly.
Hey.
I mean, not that it's without, you know, there are streaks of humor.
Let's think about the sadistic bunnies in our life. There's a few. Think about Bugs Bunny dressed in a women's clothing, kind of tricking Elmer Fudd.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's moments where the bunny can be a little tricky.
Are you a fan of Nick Cave? I'll bet you are.
I've never heard of him, sorry. Of course, yeah, Nick Cave's a legend, yeah.
Do you know his novel, The Death of Bunny Munro?
There you go. See, there's all these little things. Everybody, I haven't heard that one yet, but I do, now that you tell me, I've heard of the novel.
And the character Bunny is a pretty dark guy.
That's what I'm saying. It's a weird word, and that's the gist of it. It's such a loaded word, I think for me at least.
Yeah.
I never had a pet bunny. My father-in-law reminded me the other day, he says, hey, why'd you call it Bunny? And I said, I don't know, really. I've started to do this whole thing. And he said, well, I think I know. And I'm like, oh, yeah? He goes, remember Jesse? You always used to say Jesse was a good bunny. And that was my wife's bunny at the time. So there's been these moments. And when I had that image, I'm like, yes, that's part of it. Like, he was a bunny in my lexicon of bunnies that I pulled for this. But you know, the weirdest thing that I'll say that I found out later that I told Sam, over there from Ghostly.
That's Sam Valenti who founded Ghostly all those years ago.
I mean, that's giving me way more credit than I deserve, but I've been there since day one, and he's a good friend. So I realized, I texted him, that all of my albums, except for the first one, Leave Luck to Heaven, followed by Backstroke, and then Asa Breed, and then Beams, Black City.
Black City.
There's bees, something about the bee, and
all
then
right.
Bunny, and I realized that after, I have a thing for bee.
Okay.
It's a fat elliptical ellipse of a word, I guess, yeah.
Well, it's been 6 years between Beams and Bunny.
Yeah.
Not that you haven't been busy during that time, procreating like a bunny, among other
things.
There
you go, yeah, bringing it all together, aren't you? No, it's true, yeah, I've had three kids.
Yeah, yeah. Is that what occasioned the move from upstate New York back to your old stomping grounds in Michigan?
Yeah, I love where we were in upstate New York. We were in a little town called Berryville. And, you know, shout out to anybody that's listening that is still there. I made some really good friends out there in Sullivan County. But I always said if I was a writer, like if I was in the Nick Cave author phase of my career, that it would have been a great place to be. But being a traveling musician 2 hours from a good airport, it was just a little too out of the cut. So we moved back to Ann Arbor, where we started the label, University of Michigan. My alma mater, I guess. And
you guess? Isn't there a diploma on the wall?
I don't know where it is. It doesn't exist, but I've been told I graduated.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anthropology, cultural anthropology degree.
Really?
Yeah. The only thing you can do while you're a musician that doesn't fail you out of college, I guess.
Well, that's actually, I mean, cultural anthropology must give you a pretty interesting take it must have supplied you with kind of interesting imagery and ideas over the years.
I'm an observer.
Yeah.
You know, like most musicians are.
Yeah. Well, Black City is almost a kind of exercise in a fictional cultural anthropology, wasn't it?
The more I listen to that record, it really does represent a time in my life here in New York. And it's strange how the music does that for me, because my lyrics can be very ambiguous and out of nowhere.
And that's why Can We Rush Them? That's why those lyrics kind of struck me.
Granted, there are far more direct, acute narratives, I think, on this album, which is just me getting older and finally maybe trusting myself a bit more as a songwriter. And, you know, my legends are Townsend's Aunt, Guy Clark, John Prine. These are my father's influence that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. Dylan, of course. And so for me, there's this holy grail of a song that maybe I'm not necessarily ever going to write, but the older I get, I at least imagine more that maybe I'll find one of those one day.
Yeah. Now, when you're playing live, I mean, you've got this down to a science, you know, the voice, the guitar, the processing, the beats and all that kind of stuff. But watching you play live sets, it almost seems like you're kind of recasting and remixing the songs, you know, right there in front of us. Is that really what's happening?
Yeah, basically. I mean, the structure's there. Once people hear the album, they'll realize that the songs are always very much the same that I play live, but I either add a bit more or take away quite a bit that I can recreate with a guitar, for example, or my vocal effects. It's funny because, you know, I think I've been here with my band before.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
You know, in this day and age, it's a lot easier to travel by myself. And I love my guys. I love the guys that have played with me in the past. And I wish I could bring them all with me all the time. But three kids at home, you know, just going out on the weekends. I really wanted to get my Jamie Lydell, like, Reggie Watts, like, you know, all in one package thing.
Yeah.
And I'm still working on it, but it's a lot of fun when it all syncs, like, you know, you said, and you kind of remixing everything live. And
Yeah. Are you a weekend warrior now? Is that how you run out to a gig on the weekend?
You know what? I am touring with MGMT and they have a song called Weekend Warrior. So there you go.
All right. So Bunny is the new record from Matthew Deere. And you will be touring around.
Yeah.
Back here in New York on November 16th at National Sawdust.
Very, very excited to go to that place. I've heard good things.
It's a terrific place. Yeah. It'll be a good size for what you do and how you do it.
Cool.
Calling is the name of the next song. Mm-hmm, and this has a very kind of distinct and different sound, at least at the beginning. Where did this song come from?
This song came from a piano. I think it was digital originally, but now I have a real piano at home. So I would have liked to have written it there, but I started trying some things with piano recently that I'd never really done, and I finally forced myself, kind of like I forced myself to get into Dylan. I finally was like, all right, I'm going for it. I'm getting into Dylan. I pushed him away for a long time, and the same with piano. I think I told myself, okay, I'm going to get some apps. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to figure out what my fingers are actually doing, because I was always playing around with it, but since then I've learned a bit more of the rudimentary elements that I need to write a song on piano as opposed to guitar or just noodling with electronics. And Calling would be one of those piano songs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it really, it evokes a totally different way of singing when you're playing.
Yeah.
You get this like kind of Randy Newman like thing going on. And you're just swaying there, Billy Joel. Like you feel more of like an entertainer sometimes. So the songs I have written on piano are far more like narrative, this, which is weird. Just that's how it works for me.
So the mature Matthew Deere making his peace with Dylan and the piano. let's hear one of the results from the new album called Bunny. This is Matthew Deere and a song called Calling.
Seen your face before, it arrived at my door, it was falling, it was falling. I wrapped you up inside my arms, I wanted you to feel warm, so was falling. It was falling. I never knew a thing.
again for your love. And again for your love. You took me inside your heart and drafted up a brand new start for the calling. For the calling. If it wasn't for the bad disease that crept up inside of me, oh, it was small. And I tried to stay true to everyone inside of you, but my best wasn't good enough. No, my best wasn't good enough for the rest of us.
Matthew Deere with a live version of Calling here in our studio. On the record, there's a more kind of pronounced country twang to the voice.
I'm a Texas boy, man.
Yeah.
I was born and raised Kingsville, Texas.
It kind of reminds me in a funny way of some of the early records by Brian Eno.
Funny, huh?
Well,
I'm just kidding.
The way he would like start a song with something that sounded like 1930s music hall or 1950s doo-wop, and then it would get the whole Brian Eno treatment, but you couldn't unhear what the song started with, and by the end you're like, how did we get here?
Yeah, what's the water song that he did? It's very, very country. It's one of those little hidden gems, but same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear that completely with a song like that, yeah. I remember the first time I discovered, you know, it's kind of like when you first you meet like a twin brother. Like, I mean, I'm really putting myself up a lot higher than I need to be musically. But in my mind, as a tinkerer and as a sound messer with her, you know, when I first found Eno, I was kind of like, holy crap! Like, yes, like that's what I've been trying to do. And like, and you hear a lot of the similarities of the way he produced with the effects as the studio and
studio as a musical instrument.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I think a lot of us nowadays have done that because of the new, you know, way everything works out with computers and everything. So I'm sure everybody, a lot of people like me have found this Eno moment where you're kind of like, oh yeah, that's the king right there. That's the guy who's been doing it the best for a long time.
And
yes, I love Eno. So.
And was doing it when studios were great big rooms full of equipment and not something you could pack in a suitcase and take on
and
a plane.
Can, too. You hear about Can and like their InterVision studio, like, or the InterSpace studio, and you're just kind of like, man, like these guys, they had the money, they had no regard for time and tape cost, and they could just get crazy with it. And it's guys like that that really had the ability to just push it and do something weird that I think we have a lot of the music we do now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking with Matthew Deere about the new record called Bunny, which, you know, one of the reasons when I asked you before if you knew of Nick Cave, I assumed you did, was because you both share a love for things that are dark and gothic. Does that extend to things beyond music? Are you drawn to novels and visual art that's on the darker side as well?
No, not really. Yeah. It's funny because I guess, you know, Black City probably had a big part of that, you know, the artwork and the narrative. But I never truly came out in some sort of gothic vampiric, like, you know.
No,
I like wearing black suits, and I like, you know, I like shooting weird art stuff sometimes for the videos.
Mm-hmm.
But all my friends would never think of me, I think, as a dark, you know, Nick Cave style person. But I guess that's fine. We need to hang our head on something publicly, so we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I don't set off writing songs that are dark. I think I'm just I'm in touch with my uncertainty, you know, and I've always been very open with that and writing about that and just kind of the unknowns of everything, and you get these weird subconscious trains of thought that come out and streams of thought that come out in songs, you know, like Modafinil Blues or Can You Rush Them, where you're kind of like, oh yeah, that guy's actually pretty messed up, you know. He is dark, and a part of me is, so well, I guess bring it all back, yes, I'm dark.
But then there are two songs on the record that you did with Tegan and Sarah,
yeah,
whose voices have a kind of neat both emotional and textural counterpart to yours, you know, counterbalance, the play of light and dark.
Which... Yeah, I had to remortgage my house twice to get both those songs done. They can't stand me. No, I'm just kidding. They're awesome. I love their music. And funny story, my nephew was visiting into Michigan for the first time in the summer, and he's 15, and I was trying to tell him what I was working on, and my mom wanted him to hear Bad Ones because she really loves it. She's told me, Matt, like, play me Bad Ones again when I first made it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I played it, and then I played it. I'm like, here, let me show you another song. She's like, no. Play the Bad Ones again. Like, even my mom was like, no, like, the other stuff's okay, but like, play Bad Ones. So anyways, I had to play my nephew Bad Ones, and he's like, yeah, cool. And I'm like, you know, Everything Is Awesome from the Lego soundtrack? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, that's the girls. He's like, oh, no way. Like, that's so cool. Like, so that was
so
my
end. So you
had
to put it in context for him.
Which is such a great song, too. And then I luckily had a song coming out on Grand Theft Auto at the time through another thing that I was doing. And I told him that, and his jaw just hit the floor. He's like, what? He started telling me all about his, like, screen name history and how he interacts with the whole community, and, like, it's his favorite game. So
now you're the cool uncle.
I'm working on it. Can you be a cool dad and a cool uncle? I think, is the cool uncle only like the single uncle? Like, I don't know.
No, that's the weird uncle usually.
Yeah.
Bad Ones is, we heard just a snippet of that at the beginning of the session here with Matthew Deere today. One of two songs with Tegan and Sarah. There's also, you know, there are a couple of songs on this record that continue a trend that I've noticed in a lot of your songs, or some of your songs over the years, where some of the samples tend to be just like random, it seems, random vocal sounds. Mm. They're not even like syllables or, you know, just Slow Dance from Black City
totally.
Is built on that.
Yep.
There's some of it in Her Fantasy from Beams. And there's like three or four songs at least on this record. So is part of the fun kind of finding the least musical sounds you can make and making music with them?
I'm a very non-musical person. So in that sense, you know, I couldn't sit up here and sing a scale or a run for the life of me. You know, like, I'm not a vocalist. So I think a lot of my early beginnings of song making is me just doing a lot of that weird, like, you know, dum, 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 like, da, da, da. Like, I'm getting out melodies and like stuff like that just happens. And I hear that in the rhythm and it ends up just kind of sticking, and I leave it and it becomes more of a rhythmic part. And it kind of helps me like build the melody off of that. So I use it more like I'm my own fifth Beatle, I guess, is the way I'm trying to say it. I'm just like this random noisemaker. I'm my own Bobby McFerrin, Beatle. So, it's just fun. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it sounds really corny and I don't use those parts.
Right.
Yeah.
So a lot of those tracks are kind of basic, almost demo things that have stuck.
Everything you hear is a demo, man. Like, it's just, it's always a demo.
Well, that's very Eno-esque, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the idea that, you know, once you've committed to tape, you have to use it somehow.
Well, also Guy Clark, you know, he's always been all about saying the song is never done kind of
yeah,
thing
right.
as an acoustic performer. So I feel the same way. Back to the whole live remixing thing. It's always fun. Like there's a song on the record called Duke of Dens, which is instrumental.
Right.
And I tried to do some vocals with it. I tried to have a vocalist, this guy, Trolls Abrahamson, which amazing guy from Scandinavia, who's done some stuff with me before. He sent me some great vocals, but it just didn't work like for me. And so I left it instrumental. And when I play it live, I kind of do like the vocals. Like I just make up and I'm able to channel some of the melodies that I've always heard. So in that way, it kind of keeps going from the studio to the stage. And then maybe one day I'll put out a vocal version. Same with Bunny's Dream, like a whole verse that almost made it onto the record.
Well, and in Bunny's Dream, there were also sounds that sound like they are vocally
those are
based.
Yeah, vocal chops.
Yeah.
Also, you know, I've been listening to a lot. I love Jay Dilla and you know, the Donuts record for me. Is
oh, my God, yeah.
That's
yeah.
just, like, that's, I just talked about it recently in a print thing. And it's,
print.
I know. It's like, I'm making the rounds, man. It's like an encyclopedia of music making. Like you go to the record as a producer and you can like just, you're trying to glean information. Like you're trying to see, well, he did that with this and this and that. It's just such an amazing like ride to like listen to that. And the song I did Before I Go with Ricardo Villalobos actually is very, the last song on the record was me really trying to put some of those vocal cuts and stuff in my head, you know. And I know it doesn't come out the same way that he did it. It doesn't come close, but for me, it's the process, and it's learning how to do stuff like that that keeps me interested.
And why would you want it to sound like Jay Dilla? You know,
he's... why not, man? I'll do another Tribe record.
Yeah, but you're not him.
I know.
Although another Michigan native.
Yeah, he did a track with Debbie for Ghostly, which is definitely a high water mark for us.
So. Yeah. So one of my favorite tracks on the record, Modafinil Blues, is one of the ones that you released in advance along with The Bad Ones. And we've lived with this song for a while. it's a great song. It's got a killer beat. And this is one of those smart drugs, right? This is one of the things that's supposed to like...
Yeah, modafinil is the technical name, I think, for Provigil, armodafinil, Nuvigil. There's a whole slew of afinils, I guess.
Uh-huh.
There's internet. You can go to that.
Right.
There's a lot of internet on that. but yeah, the story goes that I've talked about is I came across them in Australia when I was touring for The Weeknd, because I'm crazy. I go to Australia and Japan for The Weeknd sometimes. And so when I'm there, you know, I don't partake. I'm retired, as John Goodman once said. He's retired.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel better. So, you know, I need something more than Red Bull sometimes.
Right.
And I was really tired. And the promoter said, hey, I've got this thing called Modafinil. I was like, oh, I've heard of that. You know, I think I took one in college or something. So I tried it. And immediately jet lag was gone. I was like awake. And it's not an amphetamine-based smart drug. It's just, it deals with dopamine receptors and stuff. So something about it was very magical. My VJ took it as well, and we both looked at each other like, are you feeling what I'm feeling, that kind of thing. And it was just clear-headed. So I had this idea for a song based on that, knowing that, so that the song itself isn't necessarily about the experience, but it's kind of a nod to, okay, you get the blues when you realize that a pill isn't going to solve all your problems, you know. So it's not really like you took too much modafinil and I got the blues. It's just the idea of not having a cure-all.
But it does let you go to Australia for a weekend.
I guess, yeah.
All right.
I haven't been back since, so we'll see.
Let's hear another live performance from Matthew Dear. Modafinil Blues is the name of it. The album is called Bunny.
On the touch fest, the
Matthew Deere, playing live in our studio. Modafinil Blues is the name of the track from his new record called Bunny. Who gets the last word on this record?
Oh, that's my daughter Asha and Senna before she could talk, and before my son Ocean was born. So, Ocean, if you ever hear this in the history of the internet, when it finally catches up to you, you weren't around. I would have put you on the record, but you weren't here yet.
Speaking of the internet, the staff did some quick digging. Modafinil is a controlled substance now, illegal to import into the United
Absolutely.
States.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do not condone doing it illegally without a prescription or anything. So I was just answering your questions, officer.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So you're going to have to leave home for more than a weekend this fall, touring around. Right here in New York, in Brooklyn, on November 16th at National Sawdust. Will this be kind of the setup we have here today, or
pretty much? I mean, every time I go out, it's a little different. I've got tons of stuff laying around. That my dog likes to sleep on in the studio. Seriously, I caught him sleeping on a whole bundle full of cables once. But this is a good version of what you'll see. You know, guitar, which I can't play for squat, effects on the vocals to hide what I do in the shower, and my music, which is my pride and joy, I guess. I make it all, so there.
And the maracas just for show, or are you occasionally
Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to play these. Yeah, I painted them. I brought them out. They're like just there for now.
Matt, it's great to see you again. Congratulations on the new record.
Thank
great
you.
To have you back.
Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck.
Such a silly plan. So I just walk. I'm really moving, man. Each step. I am moving, man. When I stop, I'm still moving, man. Look around. We're really moving, man.
That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast, but as always, there's much more to be found on our website. Lots of other performances, video shot in the studio, the daily gig alerts, weekly music roundups, new sound shows, and more. Check it out at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. Our video producer is Justin Sergi. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.